Welcome to this podcast that has a new tagline as of today. Good Morgan, the art and science of living a good life. Today we have one of my newest, awesomest friends, Kirsten, who has done the neurolinguistic programming training with me and is doing the mental health coach training with me. And through that process, we've become great friends, and she has all taught me, you have taught me so much about trauma and the science behind it. And I've learned a lot from podcasts and people talking online, but not actually from somebody who's suffered through it and then is saying it in a really personal way. And it's been so exciting and empowering to talk to you, especially as somebody who has a loved one recently diagnosed with CPTSD, which you diagnosed through talking to me before he was diagnosed. I was like, wow. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Kirsten.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So my first question, getting into the nitty gritty, for the people in the world who have literally just heard CPTSD for the first time, if they hear it, let's say I hear it for the first time because my loved one says, I was just diagnosed with this. What's a general descriptor that you would give them? Like, oh, this is what it is.
So it's easy to compare. It's easier to explain it by comparing it with regular PTSD, which is something I think most people are aware of. They may have a loved one who's gone to war or been in a car accident or been assaulted, where they have ongoing symptoms of trauma. So they may have flashbacks, they might have nightmares or insomnia or a lot of anxiety or depression or suicidal thoughts. So that's really common with people who have PTSD. With complex PTSD, by comparison, is that there isn't a singular act. There is a series of acts, or there is, and I'll give some examples. So if you've grown up in a home where there was alcoholism or child abuse, or you were sexually assaulted over a long period of time, or you had a neglectful parent, so you didn't have food in your home a lot, you create coping mechanisms, natural coping mechanisms, to be able to handle that. And they become almost part of your personality. So anxiety and depression become part of your personality. Fear, shame, guilt, people pleasing, those kinds of activities become part of your personality. Hypervigilance, those kinds of things. It's hard to separate it out and say, okay, this is because of an event. It's because of your developmentally maturing through these phases and learning to deal with these harsh situations over time. And it's, you're not learning healthy coping mechanisms.
So, okay. Thank you so much. That was a great explanation. Mm-hmm. If you're an adult and you just got that diagnosis, because there are two perspectives that I want to get from you in particular, which is one, you get that diagnosis and then you're like, cool, I can see the wiring in my brain and I get it now. I get that it's not ideal. And that's how you feel. Like, okay, I'm just broken. And what do I do now? Where do I go from here? Being farther down the path, if you were talking to you just getting that diagnosis, what would you say to her?
I would say first is give yourself a lot of grace and time. This diagnosis is, first of all, really difficult to treat. And there's not many therapists or psychologists that have yet caught on, first of all, to the vision. It's not in the DSM-4, the diagnostic manual yet. So there aren't tried and true therapies for it yet. So it's still kind of in a developmental, experimental phase. And so if you're lucky enough to have, trauma-informed clinicians, find a good trauma-informed therapist, you might need to try several. I have been through many because it's not that you're broken or that you can't be fixed. It's that you really need to find a specialist who is skilled and patient enough to do the research and find out about this particular diagnosis and how it is treated, because it is very challenging. And to just know that this is one of those marathon, not a sprint. You're not going to go to a therapist for 3 months and suddenly come out the other end and go, oh, I'm better, because it goes in layers. So you might feel like you've made some progress, and then you'll have a setback, or you'll uncover another layer of this belief, you because it creates your belief systems. It's based out of how you were raised and how your belief systems are organized, if that makes sense.
It makes so much sense. It creates your belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how
you might
raised,
not even know
how your belief systems were organized. Yeah. Wow.
So you can't deal with it until you're hit with it. So if all of a sudden you're having these insecurities at work, you have imposter syndrome really bad, and you just feel this insecurity, but it's not based in reality. That could be as a result of having been raised without feeling like you had any value, or that you could do, you know, that you could do hard things, but then you're doing it, but then you still have a belief system that's getting in the way of you enjoying the fruits of your success. So it's, and it's a very, I've kind of considered it like a big ball of yarn that's just all twisted together, and you don't know what's important to deal with until you get to it. And that's why the therapy takes so long, is that, you know, it's and it's not just about belief systems. It's also your nervous system. So you're dealing with a lot of different layers, and you might need various different kinds of therapists or modalities to be able to deal with different parts of the disorder.
Okay. That sounds so overwhelming. It's a lot. It seems like a lot to take on and a lot to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So, I get a comment that you made earlier. I'm going to hold my question because I really want to know what you would recommend for a loved one of that person, how they can act. But I'm going to wait for just a second, because first I want to hear, you said something earlier. You said that you were really mad about the media treating trauma like a weakness. And listening to everything that you just said, I would have trouble if I was diagnosed with CPTSD, not feeling like it was a weakness. So can you explain?
Yes, I sure can. The reason that, so I'm going to back up and tell you where this comes from. Before a year and a half ago, when I was officially diagnosed, I hadn't heard about PTSD other than in the traditional sense. I had no concept that there was this other kind of, you know, CPTSD out there. So I just was chronically depressed and anxious since childhood. And just, it was a battle every single day of my life, a battle. And, you know, and trying to have a normal life through that. So raising children through all of that, trying to have a normal life, trying to have a career. And imagine doing all of that with 50 pounds sitting on your head all the time. So you're really having to slog through and overcome your own brain as you are maneuvering through life. So you get used to that. And when I was diagnosed, I had reached a point I wasn't functional anymore. I had just not been able to move past it anymore. I couldn't just slog through it anymore. And went through a long period of time feeling broken, you know, just like what we're talking about. And I felt weak, and I felt, oh, I should just be able to push through this, just push through it. You know, everybody else is pushing through it. No one's going to understand. They're going to see me as weak.
Yeah.
You know, the therapy that I've been through to be able to deal with this and treat this, I don't know many people that could face themselves that way, first of all. So when we're talking about strength and we're talking about, you know, this concept of weakness, I have a new definition of that. So to me now, strength isn't in the blindly slogging through the hard things just to be successful and accomplish on the worldview what that means. It's, can you really face yourself in the mirror? Can you really deal with all your dark places and be at some peace with that? And that to me is very difficult. And I don't know a lot of people who actually are willing to be that vulnerable and do it. So there's that. Yeah. But the other thing is that when you, so that is on a, you know, on an emotional level, when I think about people who have been through trauma recovery, that's how I see them. Now, if you take it also back to where the trauma started, these are kids who have gone through neglect, abuse, religious abuse, sexual abuse, you know, very serious generational issues. And me being Gen X, our thing was, oh, we drank out of the hose outside and we just played until, it was like we had this whole aura around us of just got it out and we just do what has to be done. Well, now there's a lot of us breaking. A lot of us went through neglect. We were the latchkey kids. We were the ones forgotten. And so a lot of people don't know that they even have this until now in our 50s or 60s or whenever that we go, oh, I can't do it anymore. I just really can't do it anymore. And there is, the body eventually says, no, that's too much. You're done now. And so for somebody to call us weak because we have been doing the deal, we've been doing it, we've been putting in the time, we've been putting in the hard things, we've been doing the 60-hour weeks at work, we've been doing everything we can to prove ourselves and to get to prove that we're lovable and worthy and all the things. And now to finally have this breakdown where, okay, I can't function anymore. I can't, the body has had enough and it will shut down. And then now we got to go through recovery on top of that. So nay, there is no weakness here when it comes to dealing with trauma recovery.
A lot of people, this inspires so much. We talked, when we first talked, it was either the first or second conversation, and I saw in you something I saw in that loved one we were discussing before. And it is the opposite of weakness. It really is strength. It is the, because what hero's story is impressive or interesting when they have overcome nothing? There's a Stoic quote. I'm not going to get it exactly right, but essentially the worst adversity you can give a man is no adversity at all. And if someone, I think the generations before who have had similar problems didn't even know to face themselves. Instead, they ignored themselves until they fell into the grave. And to have the guts to turn towards yourself and your inner child and all of these things and look at them fully in the face and be like, I see that. And then the bravery and the strength to go, and I am not just going to ignore me anymore. I have a lifetime of habits of ignoring myself, of fighting where I didn't need to fight. I'm going to change my beliefs. In my 50s or 60s, the people who do that are the strongest people I have ever met. It is so beautiful. And when I first talked to you, that was the thing that called to my heart. And we were both like crying with goosebumps because it was like, you are on an epic hero's journey. I am listening to your life and I am listening to the choices you're making. And it's not a crowd of people saying, go do this thing. You have to do this thing. It's you standing up from the mud for yourself and going, I'm going to be a damn lotus flower. I'm going to grow through this mud and I am going to be a damn lotus flower. And I see that in the loved one I was talking about as well. And it's so inspiring for the people that are coming after you to have the bravery to not abandon themselves. Yeah. So I agree with you. It is not weakness.
Thank you. I appreciate the compliment. And I agree with you that I think what's the most encouraging thing for me is with the increased awareness around trauma is that I think there has been a long tendency of people my age who have been saying, oh, I can just do this myself. I can just will myself into happiness. Mm-hmm. I should be able to, and all the shoulds, I should be able to X, Y, Z. I should be able to pull myself together. I should be able to get out of bed this morning. I should be able to do all the things that Instagram tells us we should be able to do at this point. And the bottom line is that it's just not true. It's not what our bodies were designed to do. We weren't designed to tolerate this much. It was designed to create coping mechanisms. It was created to have fear. It was created to have these different emotions that protected us. Because they did their job. All mm-hmm. the things that we have as behaviors today did their job well in protecting us in some way or another. The problem is they've overcompensated. And now we have to try to dig out and figure out how we're going to move forward. And it's in a way damaged us, you know, it's like keeping a cast on too long.
Yes. Okay. So I have two final questions. Mm-hmm. I tell you that so that you can like gauge the time with which you can talk, you can respond. Okay. The first question I want to ask is, somebody's got their phone at the ready or their computer at the ready to make a list of, okay, I know that I have this diagnosis and I'm looking for treatments. What are some options that I could try? Like I've heard of EMDR and ketamine assisted therapy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what, but those are like off the top of my head, or somatic or internal family systems. What are some things that you would say, I would recommend you Google these and find somebody you can do them with?
All of those are great. So it depends on where you're at. It really is so personalized to a person. I can't give a roadmap of, you know, here and turn left. You know, it's one of the, I would say, start with a therapist, find a trauma informed therapist. If you don't like that therapist, go to another one. If you don't like that one, go to another one. Go to another one till you find one that seems to understand your symptomology and how to help you. And that's if you are okay. If you're okay, living life, but you're not great, but you're safe. If you're not safe, I would say at that point, it's time to, you know, you can find a residential program. If you have that kind of time, if there are a lot of us that are borderline suicidal for years, in that case, you know, residential might be a really good option. And that's like a month or more kind of like a good time out.
That's what a residential, I was like, what does that mean? So you go to a place.
You go to a place. So there are some, not all.
Okay.
But there are some residential facilities that specialize in trauma. And so it's important to find one that is trauma informed, that has trauma recovery. I would make those phone calls and say, okay, do you have treatment for CPTSD? And it's a good opportunity to jump out of life for a month or more and only focus on yourself and be able to really look inside your own head and say, what's happening here? And hear other people and what they're experiencing so that you can go, oh yeah, I do that. I do that. Oh my gosh, I do that. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's really helpful in really supporting yourself and your nervous system. Getting correctly medicated is important. It's not that you may forever need to be medicated, but while you're going through treatment, it's helpful. Just be stable, have your nervous system stable. So there's those things. Therapy, trauma-informed therapist. I have a therapist, a regular therapist for religious trauma. I also have a therapist for somatic experiencing, which is how your body holds on to trauma, how it processes trauma. And so that is a whole podcast all on itself on how that works. But how do you retrain your nervous system to not react and trigger all the time? And so those are, I think, the first things is to find a really good next step. However, I would add, those who are at that point where they're burned out and in a crisis state and are at the end of their road, it is really important to get into some sort of emergency crisis. Go into an emergency room at your local hospital, or find a emergency kind of mental health crisis facility you can be in for a couple of days. Get medicated, get stable, and then you can go ahead and go on with your journey.
A lot of people are going blind, you know?
Yeah.
Well, their therapist doesn't know.
Yeah. I won't go into MDMA then. I'm not going to do that because that's really complicated. I still haven't totally figured out how I feel about it. But as far as ketamine and Spravato are concerned, so ketamine is, it's wonderful. I just can't say enough good things because what it's done for me is it gives me a reprieve from my hypervigilance. And it has allowed me to take breaks. You know, and Spravato is a medicinal form that's covered by insurance where you go into an office and get it done. And so they've taken out some of the elements of ketamine that make it highly hallucinogenic, kind of, I don't know how else to describe it, but they've taken out parts of the molecule. And so, but what it does is it kind of dissociates for a little while and lets your brain work without having all the hypervigilance and shame and stuff like that attached. So you're able to kind of break out of the box for a little while. And it has helped a lot with that crushing depression that I've had. So it's, and I've been on them for a long time. It's taken a while. Some people don't need very long. Some people can just go a couple of months and it's very helpful. Some it's longer. And it's just a matter of, it, for me, I can say it has the effect of allowing me the habit of not having to worry all the time.
Wow. It's that's huge.
It just kind of clicks you out of zone for a little while and you can enjoy it. So that's what it's done for me. I don't know what the clinical, this is supposed to be what it does, but it helps me. So
thank you. These are beautiful. This is the, thank you so much for doing this. Okay. So my final question is, what do you appreciate most that your loved ones do in caring for you and being a good husband, daughter, friend, et cetera, to you? And what advice, if we could take it, us loved ones of people diagnosed with this, if we could really hear that advice, what do you appreciate and what advice would you give?
I've appreciated how much space my family has given me to just hands off the wheel, kind of get out of my way. Let me do what I've needed to do to take care of myself, not fuss over me, not worry about me, not, you know, try to help me help myself, but just let me and my therapist do what needs to be done. And they've all been wonderful at that. Let me talk when I need to talk, but don't, you know, force me or want explanations or, you know, all those kinds of things. I mean, they can be curious. That's fine. Curiosity is great. I love educating, but about things that are personal that I'm struggling with, you know, that may or may not be something I want to share. And so just having the patience and not take it personally. I think that's one of the things too that I would also say is that there's a lot of anxiety disorders around this. And a lot of people want to help someone with an anxiety attack or a panic attack. and they try to step in and help, but they don't understand what helping is needed. And so in those cases, it's just best to let the person who's in treatment manage their own ecology, their own system, and ask for what they need instead of trying to take care of them. And so I think just simply, what can I do for you? What do you need from me right now? Is the best question ever.
Yeah.
And then just take their answer, whatever it is, just take it. And let them know that, you know, what they need is important.
Yeah, I love that. It's very much letting our loved ones lead their own lives and be their own heroes is one of the greatest acts of love we can give. Like, we often think that giving advice is the best, especially if we've learned something, we want to share the thing we've learned, you know? And then what it's really saying when somebody's like, I'm having this problem, if you go, great, here's advice, it's saying, the little that I know is enough to be better at solving this than you, versus listening and going, okay, damn, you may not know the way forward yet, but I'm certain you will.
Yeah.
Look at all you've done. Like, just actually witnessing as somebody who knows them well, going, I promise you can handle this.
Right.
you're the hero of your story.
Right. And I think that's really the thing, is that a lot of us, we consider ourselves strong people, independent people. We're the ones that other people have relied on for things. We've had responsible jobs. We've raised incredible families.
This is a great point.
Yeah. And these are not people who just usually cower in corners. These are people who have done battle. And we don't want to be a burden. We don't want to be a problem for somebody. We want to handle these things for ourselves. We just don't know how yet, you know, and this journey is one where we are taught how to take care of that for ourselves. And it actually is very liberating. If you know, once you get to a certain point and you've gone through treatment long enough and you start to build the tools slowly, you are able to self-maintain.
Truly, this has been awesome. It was such a perfect download of info and encouragement and education. Sure. So thank you so much for coming on Good Morgan.
Thank you for having me.
And to all the audience, I hope you love your day. I hope you love you. Good Morgan. And that's the end. That was awesome. That was so good.
Was it?
That was good. Yes. That was so good. I'm excited for this.
This was fun. This was a good day.